Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show, American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. This was supposed to be the NESL Soccer Bowl final preview show, but due to both sides not able to allowing me to talk with their head coaches, obviously they got a lot of planning to go through. So this had to be switched into the MLS playoff review in the Western Conference playoffs. And boy, when you're talking about both games in the Eastern Conference going into extra time and winners in extra time are both Houston and Sporting Kansas City, you look at the goal aggregate series in the Western Conference, and when you saw the Portland Timbers go out and actually doing a job and getting two goals in the first half, 3-1 on aggregate, 4-1 on aggregate, then you get that third goal, 5-1 on aggregate. Right away, you're thinking to yourself, there's a possibility here that it's going to be a runaway. But the Sounders made it interesting. They pull two back, 5-2, 5-3 on aggregate. And what happened? Portland holds on. It wasn't enough from Seattle to make it that interesting, but at least it got the nerves jangling a little bit from the Portland Timber supporters. But at the end of that second 90-minute match, it would be the Portland Timbers, Caleb Porter's side, advancing into the Western Conference Finals, MLS Cup semifinals, taking on a side in Real Salt Lake, taking on their nemesis in these playoffs, of course, the Los Angeles Galaxy. And even though LA had the aggregate lead with one goal, the question is, can the Galaxy add on to their aggregate scoreline, or will Salt Lake find a way to get by? And you just have to say that Salt Lake did a job. Yes, there was an equalizer on aggregate, a 1-0 lead at Rio Tinto Stadium from Velazquez. But my goodness, unbelievable stuff going on towards the end of that match. And it would be the LA Galaxy who were eliminated on aggregate by a final of 2-1. The Los Angeles Galaxy looking for a possibility, to get to their third consecutive MLS Cup final and even in extra time. Chris Schuler puts RSL ahead and makes it a 2-1 aggregate victory for Real Salt Lake in the 102nd minute. Three of the four games in these MLS Cup quarterfinals, you saw quality football, quality soccer being played here. And yes, some of the favorites were probably disheartened to get eliminated. One who had an opportunity to at least steal a place in the Eastern Conference Final, the MLS Cup semifinals, but once again, you saw excellent soccer being played from both sides in every single matchup. Seattle versus Portland, well done. Real Salt Lake versus Los Angeles Galaxy, well done. New York versus Houston, fine. Houston gets their little revenge. New England versus Sporting Kansas City, and Sporting Kansas City finally showing why their stadium is a fortress when it's filled to the hilt. And once again, we're seeing why these playoffs are exciting. We're seeing the reasons why it's going to be a fun ending to this MLS playoff schedule. I love it. It's great. I'm enjoying it. It's just unbelievable what we're seeing here in this month of November. And now we're going to have an Eastern Conference and Western Conference first leg event this weekend as we're going to see Sporting Kansas City on the road in Houston. And then we're going to see the Portland Timbers on the road at Real Salt Lake. And, of course, you can see the Eastern Conference matches on Saturday, the 9th and the 23rd on NBC, as well as NBC Sports Network. ESPN will have the Western Conference Finals Sunday, November the 10th, and Sunday, November the 24th. We will have some time, as it will be a big break, as we watch not only the USA playing these friendlies against Scotland and Austria, but we'll also see what will happen when these teams in Europe, Africa, and the two intercontinental playoffs pick up the final spots to go to Brazil for the World Cup. But once again, everybody, this has been exciting. This has been fantastic. This has been unreal. I wish, to be honest, that all four weekend dates would have been used for all of these playoff games, but sadly enough, that has not happened. But it does not take away the excitement and the thrill, the heartache, the agony, the positive of what we've seen here in these MLS Cup playoffs. It has been fantastic to watch, exciting to see, and I've enjoyed watching them with you, replaying the games all day. This is why it's exciting. And once again, you know, if you want to throw in the conversations, if you want to discuss the other mechanism, of course, ProRel, like I've said many, many times, I will not stand in the way if it does happen. The point is that you want this league to survive. You want Major League Soccer to grow. You want all of our leagues to grow and do things that makes it the right way. That's all I've ever said, and that's all I've ever asked. Because if we don't do things the right way, then it could fall apart again. And that's what I don't want. I'm sure that's not what you want either. I truly believe that you guys want Major League Soccer to succeed, and you want Major League Soccer to do well. You want all our leagues to do well. And until those times, or shall I say, until everything is in perfect working order, then we'll make the move, or the move should be made. But until that time, we cannot assume putting in that mechanism right now is going to work right off the bat. We cannot assume that this will be an automatic, because I'm here to tell everyone who claims that this is not a real league until we move into that mechanism. Get it straight. This is a real league. This is a real league whether you want to believe it or not. This is a real league, and we are working hard to make it better, to enjoy it. And you know what? I'm damn proud of it. I am proud that Major League Soccer is doing fantastic. It's doing much better and much stronger. And here's a little nugget I want to bring out here for a second here, because I found this actually through a friend of mine. His name, of course, is Matthew Conroy. He does the Viper's Nest website. It's a Red Bull site. And from Forbes.com, the popularity of Major League Soccer is surging. Go to Forbes.com, look up Alex Morel's report, and the title is After Flirting with Failure, Major League Soccer Popularity Now Surging. And you see the charts. Everything is growing. In 2002, 26% of our fans, 5.1% are avid fans. Then it grew 27.9% in 2007 for fans, avid fans, 5.4%. And then in 2012, last year, 34.6% are fans, avid fans are 7.3%. And even though, which is true, the NFL in this country is a lot bigger and a lot stronger, and they are probably, and right now they're number one in all the five major sports leagues in the United States. And Major League Soccer right now is 4%. They're 4% behind the National Hockey League. And I'm a hockey fan, and I love hockey. But if Major League Soccer can go past them, then that's fine. Will we get to the top two, the top three? Because right now Major League Baseball is number two. We shall see. We shall see what happens. But the point is that the league is getting bigger. The league is getting better. It's growing in the right way. It's growing in the right way, and that's what we need. And you know what? That's why I'm happy. We have time on our hands here. There's no reason at all to jump into the fast track and wreck the positives that have happened. Because there are plenty of positives to go as we discuss this league. There are more problems probably ahead of us than just this little thing called ProRel. But I am happy and I am positive and I feel damn good that this situation is getting to the point where I'm happy that it's sustaining itself, not just on the popularity of the fans, but, of course, the financial part of it. The TV contracts, I understand there's been a problem, but you know what? We can't worry about that right now. We just have to hope that ESPN continues to commit to Major League Soccer, and we also need to hope that NBC will also keep their commitment to Major League Soccer as well. because we really need to go there and get these two sides to agree that if you just stay with it, keep promoting it, it will do well. Let's go right now to Portland.
So Stephen Lenhart, please.
And I'm going to try Stephen Lenhart again, of course. Nevitz. Oh, maybe this is him right now. Let's see if we can bring him along here. I believe we got Mr. Stephen Lenhart on the line. Stephen, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. Boy, oh boy. You took a 2-1 goal aggregate lead after the first leg at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. You come home. Portland does the business. Obviously a little, I wouldn't say nervy, twitchy time, but you have to say that Caleb Porter and the Timbers, they went out there and did the business, and now you're going to your first ever Western Conference final.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I think the important thing to remember about both those legs is that in the first leg, the Timbers went up 2-0 before Seattle got their first goal. And then yesterday, the Timbers went up 3-0 before the Sounders were able to get one on the board, and then they tagged one back. And I think that, you know, by getting up and taking the game early to them and getting, you know, the key goals early on, I think that's kind of what really set the tone in both the games where, you know, it was maybe you look at the final scores of both those and you're like, oh, those are pretty close games. But I think the Timbers were able to dictate the pace and the tempo of what they wanted to do in both those games.
Absolutely. You know, the first goal obviously was a penalty as Will Johnson converted. But, boy, I have to say, you know, Jack Jewsbury was very adamant that the penalty should have been called, which he was correct to do so because – it was a handball. I just didn't understand why the officiating crew took such a long time to determine if it was a penalty or not. Grajeda, who was the official in the middle, and his assistant on the far side, I mean, I don't know what they were looking at originally, but, you know, to call, I mean, it was the right call. Just I don't know why it took so long.
Yeah, I don't know. That was kind of a mystery. We were kind of – you know, I was right there, right behind the goal, about 20, 30 rows up right there. So I had a pretty good eye on that. And, yeah, I'm not sure exactly why it took that long, but you got to give credit to the officiating crew to be able to talk to each other and sort that out. Because sometimes you'll see a center ref maybe not really communicate very well with their linesman. So they got it right, and I guess that's all that matters in the long run.
Yeah, it really does. And then just before halftime, Diego Valeri, what a rip just inside the area. I don't know how tight of an angle it was, but, boy, he got it past Gisperning to make it 2-0 on the night and 4-1 on aggregate on a nice feed from Rodney Wallace.
Yeah, yeah. It was you know, that extra effort. I think that's a lot of times, you know, you sometimes get a little frustrated watching some of the matches and you're like, you know, man, just a little more effort and, you know, you could either win a free kick or, you know, get a goal or whatever. And I think that's been kind of the thing with this team. I think Caleb Porter's really done a good job in setting the tone that, you know, regardless of what the score is, you need that extra effort if you're going to be successful in this league. And, you know, Valeri has some good, you know, pedigree and background and stuff as far as that goes. So, you know, he kind of leads the way and leads by example. And I think that goal was just kind of a showcase of what a little extra effort can do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, a quick goal in the second half to make it 5-1 in aggregate, 3-0 in the match. Futi Danso, how he was able to get loose, and he puts his head on that ball to make it 3-0. You just have to say Caleb Porter, even though this is his first year in Major League Soccer, he's really done a fantastic job getting these players to be on the same page and to go out there, especially against your big rivals in the Seattle Sounders, how they're able to put this one in the books. And now you're going to your first ever Western Conference final in Major League Soccer in the top league.
Yep. And, you know, you got to, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people realize, but Footy Danso, he's one of the last remaining guys that kind of branched, you know, the USL days with the current MLS setup. And, you know, he's had many battles against the Sounders and in his days coming through the Timbers. And, you know, it was, I think if you're rooting for a guy to score a goal in that situation, I think that's the guy. Just kind of, you know, just the whole dramatic night and series and everything, I think that was pretty sweet. And, you know, you see how important that third goal was. I mean, you know, Caleb Porter said it time and time again, you know, if they want to get that first goal, and when they get that second one, they want that third one. And, you know, that falls right into that same mentality. But it was also great where, you know, I was kind of wondering how both teams were going to come out to play, because, you know, the Timbers had the one goal lead, but was Seattle going to sit back and kind of just try to drag it out to 0-0? Was it, you know, were the Timbers going to have trouble breaking them down? You know, I think it was a great example of, you know, how far Seattle's fallen in the last, 10 matches where they've only had one win. And the Timbers, you know, they knew that if they can get that first goal, that the Sounders are going to have their heads down a little bit. I think a little bit of credit to Seattle towards the end getting those last two goals. But overall, I think, you know, they saw the Sounders there for the taking, and they went for it.
Yeah, they really did. You know, obviously, before the Timbers came into Major League Soccer, I think the last couple of years, you faced the Sounders when you were still in the USL, in the back then, the USL First Division, that you did play a couple of US Open Cup games against the Sounders, and you know, you were behind them every single time. You know, obviously the rivalry was still big. I shouldn't say still big. It is big. I mean, but you know, just to say that, would you say you finally got one ahead of them this time in the MLS Cup playoffs?
Yeah, I would say that. I don't even think it's just about the playoffs. I mean, if you look, I guess somebody counted back, but I guess we played the Sounders three times in the last 25 days and won all three of them. And, you know, this is coming from three times in the last 25 days and won all three matches. And, you know, this is coming from a Timbers team that, you know, if there was any question marks with this team, it was that, you know, they did it in the regular season, sure, but they got a lot of draws out of that. And, you know, were those draws going to stick around for the playoffs and make things difficult for the Timbers, you know, maybe potentially getting into a penalty kick situation, which they did in the U.S. Open Cup against Seattle a few years ago, too. So, you know, but I think overall, I think you would have to say the Timbers are now one up on the Sounders. I mean, for so many different reasons. But I think it was great to see, you know, the Timbers going straight after a rival, an arrival that, you know, they knew that Sounders had a lot of doubts. You know, there's a lot of doubts on that back line for the Sounders. They've splashed out a lot of money for Dempsey, but, you know, the times I've been to all those matches this year and that Dempsey's played out against the Timbers, and it's looked to me like they're not quite sure where they want to put him in the setup. He's kind of all over the place. You know, he might be hurting a little bit too, but, you know, then Ziggy has to make that decision. Is it better to have him on the bench or, you know, in the lineup? And then you kind of look at the situation for the Sounders with the goalkeeping situation. I mean, they pulled their top keeper in that first match before the Timbers, and then they got burned a little bit, and then they had that suspension. And so they were kind of shuffling their both keepers in and out, and neither of them, I don't think, were very much on form at all. So there was a lot of question marks with Ziggy, you know, I think, and the Timbers were kind of able to benefit from that. I mean, Yedlin, a rookie, playing all those minutes and not really getting any breather. So, they had to make a decision about not, you know, to play him or not with a bit of a sore foot. So I think, you know, and you contrast with what Porter's done, and I think Porter, you know, he's kind of shortened up the bench a little bit, but I think he's done a good job about shuffling guys in and out. So if you do need to, you know, say we have a yellow card suspension, you could put AJB back in, Baptiste, he got a lot of playing time with the Timbers this year, and he's a center back. You know, he can fit in if Kahn goes out with the yellow card. I think there's guys that have gone in and out of the Timbers lineup where I think they'll be comfortable if there is suspensions going forward.
Let me ask you this. When did the city of Portland finally start feeling, in whatever game it was during the season, that there's an opportunity for the Timbers to have something special? I mean, obviously, not questioning the die-hardness of every Portland Timber fan, but
right.
Because Caleb, this is his first year, when did this feeling of this guy could actually help the Timbers get into an MLS Cup final?
Ooh. It kind of built. I mean, I think we all – I mean, the expectation going into the season was just making the playoffs. But then, you know, I think it kind of just built. It started in the preseason. It was obviously just looking at the preseason, you could see the complete different way that the team wanted to play. That was the first thing. And, you know, in May, it took just a little bit to kind of come together. But I think when people started to see Valeri, they knew there was quite a bit of upgrade with that position, with the center mid. I would say, you know, one of the things, too, is maybe going a further in the Open Cup this year. So that sort of format, I think, is going to help them, you know, is already helped them, I think, in the playoffs. You know, a one-game situation where win or go home type of thing. And I think the Timbers, move through that a little bit further than they ever have. I also think we went toe-to-toe with Salt Lake. The Timbers have yet to beat Salt Lake this year, but, you know, I think Salt Lake's the best team that the Timbers have consistently played all year. And I think I think just by showing that there's, you know, the team out there that they're still hungry to beat, I think that was also the Kansas City match when they beat Kansas City, when they went to Kansas City and they came out, 3-2 win, I believe it was, and coming back in that. So there was several signs, but, you know, I think it's just been kind of one of those things that it's just built. It's gone from, this is going to be a good team to where it's like pretty much every time you go out and watch the Timbers, at least at home, you feel like they're going to win.
Absolutely. All I can say is good luck in the first leg on Sunday against Real Salt Lake. You've already faced them in the U.S. Open Cup semifinals. This time you're going to have the first leg over at Gelb Wen. Good luck in that one. After the first leg.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's gonna be very interesting because the Timbers have played Salt Lake already four times this year. Timbers have yet to come out with a victory. They've had a few draws with them and then some losses. I think maybe two losses, one in league and one in the Open Cup. I think all the matches have been competitive except for the one. I think the Timbers lost 3-0, but there was a red card in there where the Timbers were playing a man down for a half. So, you know, all year the Timbers, I think, they don't really want to play the favorite yet. I think it's too early for that. So I think, you know, Salt Lake is one of those teams where they want to keep the ball. But they're also, I'd say, Salt Lake is the favorite in this. So I think that gives a little more hunger to the team and a little more concentration level. Going in, so I'm feeling good about the chances, and, you know, regardless of how it all comes out, I think, you know, if there's the one team out there that the Timbers are trying to be like, I think, is Salt Lake, so I think it's going to be a good challenge going forward and just a good thing to see where the Timbers are at, really.
All right, well, listen, I'll talk to you after the weekend, and good luck.
All right, cool, thanks.
No problem at all. Stephen Lenhart, five minutes to kick off blog and podcast, covering everything the Portland Timbers over there in the Pacific Northwest. Joining me now is a first-time guest, of course, big Salt Lake supporter out there Mr. Denzel Esslinger. I hope I got your last name correct, Denzel, because I don't want to be. Hey, look, my name's easy to screw up too. I'm, you know, not the first, not the last. That's the whole thing. But thank you for coming on today.
Not a problem. You can call, you know, the last name however you want to pronounce it. None of it's going to bother me much.
Okay, good. As long as it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother me. But but still, though, you got to say that this was. I know it was only a goal that RSL lost to in the StubHub Center in L.A. against the Galaxy, but leading up to the home leg in the second leg over at Rio Tinto, was there any apprehension that this could be another one of those moments that Salt Lake maybe fall apart and lose to the Galaxy? Was there any apprehension at all?
You know, L.A. is always a tough team, but if you watch that match from last week that was down at the StubHub Center. The first half, L.A. was a really good team. You know, even Jason Christ came out and admitted the formation adjustment that he tried to make simply didn't work. The second half, when he changed the formation, I thought RSL looked a lot more competitive. And at Rio Tinto, you know, even though there have been these heartbreaks, you just always feel like RSL is going to be able to do something. Even in the Open Cup, to the very last second, you know, DC is being dominated. They've got the goal lead, and everybody in that stadium is just believing that that goal is going to come that'll send it to extra time. So, you know, for me, yeah, you always worry about a team like LA because Keane and Donovan are just simply the most dominant duo in MLS. I don't care what anybody says about Henri and Cahill or any other combination. Those two players, when they are on their game, are as good as this league gets. And so you never can take anything for granted when you're going to face the Galaxy.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely agree with you there. And the job that Jason Christ has done with basically, like I said many, many times here, you shed Olave, you shed Espíndola, you shed Will Johnson. There's a possibility that this rebuilding process could take at least a year or two, maybe three. And here they are, not only in an Open Cup final, but hosting it. But here you are in the MLS Cup playoffs, and you just ousted the Galaxy, and you're going to take on another tough side in the Portland Timbers. I mean, this could be probably Jason Christ's best magic trick ever.
You know, and if you ask him, he's been pretty forthright about this. He doesn't consider it a rebuilding. You know, the one thing that RSL has done since Jason's taken over is tried to build depth. You know, I think having a staff that's all former players, they understand how long the season is. They understand the ramifications of injuries, of national team call-ups. And so the depth over the years has just built. And if you look at the players that RSL has let go in the last several years that are playing someone else, you know, Colin Warner is one of the regulars up in Montreal. Ryan Johnson, you know, who goes to San Jose, he goes all over the place, and now is at Portland. You know, it just Gene Alexander played for San Jose for a while. Akita Harris in Colorado, all guys who, you know, were here and part of that depth. And you know, MLS simply doesn't let you keep enough quality players long enough. The salary cap just won't allow it. Imagine if Will Johnson was still here and Ryan Johnson was still here and we had been able to keep, you know, someone like a Yurima Sisian here in MLS and at RSL. You know, and so Jason has built this, and it's not just Jason. It's Jason, his staff, it's Garth Lagerwey, it's Bill Manning, it was Dave Checketts, and now it's Deloy Hansen. It's the entire organization has built this level of depth where they feel like you've got interchangeable pieces. And so when you lose three guys, and every fan felt it, and I know the RSL staff felt it because, you know, when people talk about the RSL family, it's a connection that the players have in the locker room. It's a connection with the fans, the staff. And so nobody likes to see anybody ever leave, you know, and it's like that. It's almost a gang thing. It's a once in, never out. And so I'm still a huge Will Johnson fan. I can cheer for him, you know, this year, every match except six, you know. And so Jason will tell you it wasn't a rebuilding. It may have been a little bit of a retooling, but they had confidence in the younger players. They knew that a Luis Gil could step up. They knew they had a Sebastian Velasquez coming. You know, the biggest change really was up top, where we let every forward go except Alvaro Savarillo, who's the only forward who was on our roster, you know, who played last year. In comes Robbie Finley. Then you pick up Devin Sandoval. Then you get a João Plata. And, you know, then you find the talent in the raw of an Olmes Garcia, and all of a sudden you go from one forward to having so much depth that somebody who on any other team like an Olmes Garcia is probably playing at a Deshaun Brown level where he's able to be in the Rookie of the Year conversation because you get so many minutes. And here he's fighting to get minutes because there's so much competition and depth.
I have to agree with you about João Plata. I think he's been probably the biggest acquisition for this club when Toronto decided to trade him to your side, or he was released by Toronto and you picked him up. Jason Christ picked him up. I think he's been probably the X factor. Outside of Alvaro Savarillo, who has been as dangerous as ever, but I think Plata somehow has turned the midfield into probably becoming more dangerous than it used to be.
Yeah, I think the unique thing with Plata, even so, when he starts, he provides just kind of that Energizer Bunny type thing. You know, he's got some pace to him. He's got that low center of gravity, and he's just fearless. He'll go for anything. He doesn't care if, you know, at 5'2", if he's going up against an Omar Gonzalez at 6'5", he doesn't care. He's going, and that's his ball. And so he brings kind of just that motivating mentality in how he plays and that energy level. And then you look at bringing him, as we have several times, off the bench, where you wear somebody down, and then you throw a Plata who's, you know, again, you know, half Energizer Bunny, half Bulldog, just going for everything, working hard, you know, creating chances for himself and creating some great chances for other players. And all of a sudden, you know, here's a guy who, again, like you said, a bit of a cast-off, has found a role and has really established himself as a vital part of what RSL's doing.
Chris Shuler, of course, makes the big aggregate goal winner in the 102nd minute in extra time. Javier Morales sets him up so he can put it in. Talking about Chris Shuler, like you said before, some of the players for depth, how has he been for RSL as this year has gone along for the club this year?
You know, I think coming into the season, he was the clear going to be the replacement for Olave. That's why RSL felt they could let Olave go, is we had Shuler, and when Chris Shuler is healthy, I think he is an incredible athlete. If we can get him a full healthy season, I think Jurgen starts to maybe take notice after the World Cup, because here's a big, strong, young guy. He's pretty good with his feet. He's not slow, and he's learning how to tactically read the game from one of the best, and Nat Borchers, you know, and working with the RSL staff. And so the confidence level was there. He was just so hampered with injuries during the season that it really was hard for him to get minutes. And, you know, thankfully RSL had the additional depth of picking up Kwame Watson-Siriba, who was able to play a lot at the beginning of the year, and then he got hurt. We were forced to look, you know, then you're down to your fifth center back, and we're bringing up, you know, a kid who was just an academy player a year ago in a Carlos Salcedo, who steps in and plays pretty well. Now, granted, he had some rough spots, but to get a Chris Shuler back heading into the playoffs, to get the experience, to get the physical nature of what he can do, you know, and the, another target on set pieces, it really was a boost. And I you know, again, talking about that combination of Donovan and Keane and how deadly they are, I don't know another team that for two consecutive matches, for 120 minutes, has been able to shut them down. And I think Shuler played a huge role in that. You know, and it starts with everybody for the RSL defense. But I think Shuler and Borchers, what an amazing job to take one of the most lethal combos that MLS has and shut them down.
So, you're going to face the Portland Timbers again. in the Western Conference Final. You've defeated them 2-1 in the U.S. Open Cup semis this year. Is it you are going to expect a change of a game plan from Caleb Porter, or do you think this side is going to be able to take them on no matter what you're thrown at, or whoever's thrown at you, I should say?
You know, I don't think they're going to change tactics. I think they're comfortable in what they do, you know, and that is they are very similar, you know, and I said it today to some folks, they're very similar to RSL, but they're very different from RSL. They like to possess the ball. They like to use their outside backs and a little bit of width, and they like to create their opportunities. They've got guys who are really creative with the ball. They've got guys who are, you know, a little bit tougher in the midfield. They've got that big physical presence on the back line. They've got a keeper that, you know, you can flip a coin for most fans on who the best keeper in MLS is, and one side says Raimondo and the other says Ricketts this year. You know, that's how good those two are. So a lot of similarities. And, you know, having faced the team four times this year, I don't think they're going to change, because they didn't change this last game, you know, not even a month ago when we're in Portland. A little bit more physical, a little bit more intense on both teams playing more defense, ends up in a 0-0 draw, you know, but definitely not a boring match by any stretch of the imagination. I think there were 17 or 18 shots taken in what ends up being a 0-0 draw. So I don't think they adjust. Their lineup might be like ours, you know. Sabarillo picked up a bit of an injury late in that match. We don't know what his status will be. Ned Grabovoy was out for the match. Don't know what his status will be. And so the lineup's going to vary. I think what gives RSL kind of a distinctive advantage is the depth. You know, because there's a definite, we saw it last night. Sebastian Velasquez starts, scores a goal, his first professional goal in a playoff game. You know, if Sabarillo is hurt, we saw it in the second half down in L.A., we were able to bring on a Devin Sandoval, you know, who's another big, strong, young target, but has got some pace and works really, really hard. You know, and so I think the depth and the experience of RSL will give an advantage, but Portland's playing like they've got nothing to lose, and they don't. They've exceeded their own expectations. They're playing with a level of desire and passion that I love to see in MLS. It's what their fans have deserved, and I think it's going to be a great series. I can see it coming down to extra time in Portland, maybe. I think RSL wins it here, and then I think it's a tough battle, you know, in Portland.
Let me ask you a personal question before I let you go. As exciting as these playoffs have been, do you believe maybe Major League Soccer should add the away goals rule like they have it in Europe and in South America for the UEFA Champions League, as well as down in the Sudamericana?
I don't. And the reason I don't is we have extra time and we have PK shootouts. So, you know, away goals, part of me really likes what it is, because it forces teams to play a more offensive-minded style on the road, you know. But I just think the system's working pretty well. You know, we saw all three of the four matches over the last 2 days go to extra time. None of them went to PKs. All of them were decided in those extra minutes. And I thought it was exciting and intense. I know it was here at Rio Tinto. You know, every fan, I'm on the sidelines, you know, taking pictures, and just the energy level was incredible. And to think that you wouldn't get that because you're going to factor in what happened in the match before on away goals, I don't see a need for it.
All right. Well, like I told you, I owed you one, and here it is. But I really do hope you do come back. You're more than welcome to come back and talk about RSL anytime you want. So all I can say is thank you so much for the time, Denzel. I really do appreciate it, and good luck against Portland, and hopefully I'll have you on after this weekend.
All right, not a problem. I love talking RSL, so it's a good thing.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you, too. It's Denzel Esslinger, covering Real Salt Lake. And, of course, now we know who are going to be playing in both Eastern and Western Conference final games. And, of course, once again, this weekend, tomorrow afternoon at 2:30 Eastern Time, 1:30 Central on NBC, as well as Univision Deportes and RDS2 up in the Quebec province. Houston Dynamo will be hosting Sporting Kansas City at BBVA Compass Stadium. And then on Sunday, November the 10th, Real Salt Lake hosting the Portland Timbers at Rio Tinto Stadium, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain, ESPN, watch ESPN, and ESPN Deportes. So there they are right now. And let me ask everyone this question, because I think it's very interesting that I did bring this up again. Because, you know, talked about it last night, because if the match ended in regulation 1-1 with a 3-3 aggregate and the Red Bulls had two road goals, as well as the Houston in Red Bull Arena, they got one road goal, then you would probably say the Red Bulls should be taking on Sporting Kansas City right now. But let me ask you this. Do you think maybe it would be even a lot better if we did have away goals rule in the MLS Cup playoffs, now that both of these rounds, the conference semifinal and the conference finals, are now a two-legged series instead of two and then one and then one? You know, that's probably going to be the big question right now. That could be a big question coming up the next time we probably have a discussion like this. The possibilities of adding something that probably could be missing and maybe make it even a lot bigger and better. But there are those people, like Denzel Esslinger said, no, three of the four playoff games did go into extra time without the away goals rule. So that's what we're talking about. Who knows? Maybe this is the opportunity that's maybe in front of MLS. Will they make the changes? And I don't know if they will make the changes. But the truth of the matter is this, is that no matter what we use, no matter how we use certain mechanisms to make the MLS Cup playoffs better, right now, I think it's been great. And the thing is right now is this. We do not have away goals in the MLS Cup playoffs. Major League Soccer can make the change. If they want to, they can make the change. They've already made the change with this wild card one-and-done game before you get to the conference semifinals. The one-and-done game has been the first big change. I don't mind it. It's okay. Maybe it could be a little bit better. I don't know. But at the moment, this is what they're going for. And it's fine. But would making this adjustment make it even better? Would it make it better? And if it does make it better, then you know what? More power to it. More power to Major League Soccer for making the playoffs a lot bigger, a lot better. And I wouldn't have a problem with it. But until that happens, we got what we got, and I'm still happy with what we got. And this has been, right now, probably a pretty damn good moment for Major League Soccer. Certain things could be retooled, but the truth, right now, everything is awesome. That's all I can say. Right now, everything is awesome. We've got some time left over, obviously. I just want to set the stage here for you guys about what to expect here on the 40 Scenes Fire Internet Soccer Show. Don't forget, this coming Tuesday, 40 Scenes Fire, the MLS Cup semifinals first leg review show, or the conference finals first leg review show, however you want to call it, will be this Tuesday. We're going to have on, I'm going to try and get all four reporters who cover their teams this coming Tuesday. We'll go east and then west. Then, of course, Friday in November, Friday the 15th, USA will be at Scotland. And that USA friendly at Scotland over in Hampden Park in Glasgow, that will be at 5:30 Eastern time. I have to do something before then around 5, but don't worry. We'll have the post game at 5:30, and that'll be 30 minutes long. And then on Tuesday, November 19th, the USA friendly at Austria in Vienna against the Austrian national team. That will be also at 5 o'clock Eastern time. So that will be seen on NBC Sports Network. The friendly against Scotland will be seen on ESPN2 and Unimas. But definitely we'll have that done. And then, of course, the schedule for the second legs for both sides. Sporting Kansas City will be hosting the Houston Dynamo at Sporting Park on Saturday, November the 23rd. That will be seen on NBC Sports Network at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central. And then, of course, Sunday night, November 24th on ESPN, Portland Timbers hosting the second leg against Real Salt Lake at Jeld-Wen Field. That will be 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. And then we'll have that Tuesday to discuss with the winners and, of course, the losers of those representatives of those games. And then, of course, as we finish up this MLS season, we will have our MLS Cup final review show on the 40 Scenes Fire Internet Soccer Show. Then December the 6th, that's Friday, FIFA World Cup group draw, the final round draw, the final draw for the 8 sides of 4, the 32 teams. And we will have on different people on, of course. We're going to try and get Carter Krishnire on to discuss, try and get other people. I know some people will try and get maybe Jonathan Johnson from French Football Weekly. That is if France does advance through the playoffs. We'll try and get on some other people as well. Hopefully John Jagu, if Mexico does advance into the final round draw because of their matchup against New Zealand, we'll see what happens. But obviously, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I really would, you know, I really, really would like to try and bring over some people who do cover the world game on the show that we can discuss who might be the favorites to get out of the group. Because the way that the seeded teams are, to be honest, this could be a really, really challenging World Cup. And for those of you wondering who the seeds are, once again, if I can get the thing up in the pots in my draw sheet, we got Brazil, who's the host. And we got also from South America, Argentina, Colombia, Uruguay. Even though Uruguay is in the playoff against Jordan, if they get eliminated by Jordan, then, of course, the Netherlands will take over. But from Europe, also seeded, is the world champion Spain, Germany, Belgium, and Switzerland. This could be a really, really tough FIFA World Cup with about, you know, four solid teams from South America, four solid teams from Europe, even though I still think Switzerland is a little – I know they did well, but still, I just have a funny feeling Switzerland could be – could get eliminated here, depending on who else will be qualifying for the World Cup. Of course, we're waiting for these playoffs to be finished, waiting to see who will fill up for the five spots for Africa, the final four spots in Europe, the two intercontinental spots, obviously, between Jordan and Uruguay, and the other one, New Zealand. I don't know who will be in which pot, but at the moment, and once again, don't follow me from what I'm telling you. I'm only guessing here because of the last World Cup. I have pot two filled with the three teams from CONCACAF, the four teams from Asia, and the AFC Confederation, which would be Australia, Iran, Japan, Korea, USA, Honduras, Costa Rica right now. Unless Jordan gets eliminated, the Netherlands will move into pot one as a seed. But if Uruguay does win, Netherlands, I can see the Netherlands actually being in pot three. And then the rest, and all of Africa will be in pot three, and obviously the rest of Europe will be in pot four. So once again, don't go by what I'm saying with the pots for the draw for this coming December the 6th. This is just my speculation. And if I am right, you know what? I guess right, and it's no big deal. But right now, like I said before, this is just my speculation of how which sides will be drawn in which pots for Brazil. And I'll give it to you again. This is just my speculation, but we already know the seeded teams are in pot one: Brazil, Spain, Germany, Argentina, Belgium, Colombia, Uruguay, Switzerland. Pot four at the moment, four of the eight have already been filled in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Russia, Italy, England. Pot two, at the moment, my speculation only, just my speculation, Asia, AFC Confederation, CONCACAF Confederation, USA, Honduras, Costa Rica, CONCACAF, Australia, Iran, Japan, South Korea from Asia in pot two. Pot three will be the five sides from Africa, the other two South American sides in Chile, Ecuador, and, of course, because of the seed given to Uruguay, I think the Netherlands will be in pot three because they have a higher seed or at least a higher rank than the rest of these European teams that will be together. We'll see what happens, obviously, but I want to pass along my little information, my speculation on what's going to happen. Until then, you know, we'll find out from FIFA what's going to happen. But until then, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Stephen Lenhart from 5 Minutes to Kickoff blog and podcast. I also want to thank my Mr. Denzel Esslinger. Of course, you can follow both gentlemen on Twitter, F for Denz, D-E-N-Z. And, of course, my good friend Stephen Lenhart at the 5M in lowercase, capital letters, TKO. So I want to thank those guys for listening, for coming on tonight. I want to thank you guys for listening. I know it's a short notice, but still, though, I'm very happy that you guys are listening to the show. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you so much for listening to tonight's show. Join me this Tuesday once again to recap first legs of the conference finals in both East and West, some friendly review shows with the USA at Scotland on Friday, at Tuesday. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. Please enjoy your football. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Enjoy the weekend's playoff games. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.